Chapter 10. The Last Guardian. Vulcan. The Primarch ran his hand down the silver carving, following the lines depicting a human warlord on his knees, weapon offered up in surrender. A scene of great mercy, with the Emperor himself, rendered here in the artful techno-savagery he wore in the Unification Wars, accepting the surrender with a bowed head and good grace. Vulcan treasured these insights into his father's life. Here was the Emperor before any of the Primarchs came into being, before any of the grandest steps of the great plan were brought to fruition. A time before the Imperial Truth. A time before the Imperium.
"Were you lonely, Father? Is that why you made us?"
Vulcan stepped back from the carving. The great doorway was resplendent with these bas-relief images, reaching from the stone floor to the chamber's vaulted ceiling. They called it the Silver Door now, but here was the original Eternity Gate, a monument to ancient triumphs, serving as the barrier warding the Emperor's throne room from the rest of his laboratory labyrinth. You could walk a Titan through the doorway when it was open, though it was far smaller than the great gateway on the surface that had come to eclipse its subterranean forebear and steal its name. Still, this relic possessed a breathtaking charm of its own. Since coming to his father's throne room, Vulcan had long speculated just how many artisans had worked on this masterpiece, and just how long their efforts had taken them. Like so much of the Emperor's work, it had been commissioned and constructed in secret. Did the artists and engineers demand payment for their sweat and genius? Surely some did. Were they understandably mercenary in their mortal interests? Surely some were. Or was it enough, for most, that they were to be honoured like this, permitted by the master of mankind to contribute their craftsmanship to the very door of his throne room? Whatever the truth, it was a tragedy for this work to be seen by so few. The new Eternity Gate, the inheritor to the name that stood locked far above these chambers, was the most reinforced and defended portal in the Imperium. The forgotten doorway down here was armoured in nothing but art. Footsteps drew near. Vulcan's senses were tuned beyond mortal limit. Even with the grinding industry of the Emperor's laboratory going on all around, he could hear the other man's creaking sinews, the rustle of robes, the clink of a familiar black staff against stone.
"Greetings, Malkador," he said without turning. "Is it time?"
Malkador nodded wordlessly. Vulcan ran his fingertips over the image of his father's face once more.
"He looks almost serene here, does he not? Accepting this man's surrender, with the future still unwritten. A time when the madness we now face was impossible to conceive."
"A lifetime ago," Malkador replied.
He sounded weary, and something worse than weary. He sounded shattered.
"No word yet from Sanguinius? Nor anything from the Khan's forces at Lionsgate."
The tone made Vulcan turn. Defiance gleamed in eyes of predator red.
"We will win, Mal. Banish the defeat from your voice."
Malkador, regent of terror, leaned on his staff and met the Primarch's gaze from beneath his hood. Depending on which stories one believed, Malkador was ancient, ageless, or immortal. Yet he looked withered, gripped by a weakness that grew more profound with each passing hour.
"Victory may come, yes."
He sounded thoughtful, at least, rather than defeated.
"But I wonder who among us will be around to savour it."
Vulcan rested a gauntleted hand on the old man's bony shoulder, gently, carefully, the merest pressure.
"Any word from Rogel?"
"Bab Bastion holds. He still cannot break out."
Vulcan shook his head at Malkador's diplomatic turn of phrase. Bab Bastion was the secondary heart of the siege, the core of Imperial logistics and vital to the coordination of the defence. The Bastion systems were one of the few comm nexuses able to breach the atmospheric distortion. Dorne and his command staff oversaw not just the warfare in the inner palace, but remained attuned to the near-infinite conflicts raging across all of Terra. Rogel Dorne would leave Bab Bastion when it fell, and not a moment before. Not while tens of millions of soldiers stood in the field needed his command expertise.
"Whether he can break out or not is irrelevant," said Vulcan. "He is too selfless to try, and too bound by duty to abandon his post. He is trusting us, Mal. Trusting us to hold without him. We will not let him down."
Malkador looked distinctly uncomfortable.
"He also sent word that the dead have started to walk."
Vulcan stared for a moment.
"Did he qualify that statement?"
Malkador leaned on his staff, exhaling slowly.
"The dead from both sides. He says they are rising, that they march upon the sanctum."
Vulcan took a last look at the carving of his father, then turned away, moving back into the throne room. Priestlings and various Mechanicus adepts moved aside as they went about their work, labouring at the Emperor's secret engines. The throne room was different every day, forever expanding, undergoing repairs, losing burnt-out machinery and accumulating fresh clanking ironworks. The ever-present hum of Dark Age power set many of the mortals' teeth on edge. Vulcan heard it as a song, a melody of half-mastered artistry from mythology. The crashing of these overworked machines was the sound of a lost age, and this too was wondrous. Taking up the whole of one wall was the Webway portal. The great circular aperture no longer showed the alien realm beyond, nor did it show the throne room's engraved sandstone wall behind. They had tried to kill it, flash-frying the awakening machinery and breaking the power sources to terminate the opening for good, only for the doorway to remain partially open. It wouldn't close. The things on the other side refused to let the wound heal. Now the Emperor held it sealed through force of will. It existed in a state of perpetual low power, a huge grey eye that sighed white mist into the throne room in a ceaseless exhale. Even the mortals and menials working in the throne room could feel the weight of psychic pressure. Noses bled, eyes ran red with tears of blood. The augmented among them kept suffering bionic failures, implanted organs and limbs malfunctioning without cause. The unaugmented endured muscle wastage and slow-building embolisms. Sometimes they spoke in tongues, conversing in languages they'd never learned. They dreamed waking dreams of lives they'd never led. Their memories were overwritten by warfare in the age of strife, by a primitive boy's existence on the banks of the river Sakaya, by the feel of wheat against their fingertips, and the weight of the first bolter in their fists, and on it went. Above everything, suspended in a vast cobweb of cables and support struts, the golden throne was the nucleus of the song. Some of the humans in the chamber wore goggles against its light. Others shielded their eyes with their hands when they had to turn in its direction. Many simply tried never to look up. Vulcan saw no blazing aura, just a faint nimbus of light, no more painful to the eyes than a candle flame. His father sat enthroned, eyes closed, features tensing with pulses of silent pain. The Emperor gripped the armrests, gloved fingers squeezing in rhythm with each flinch. His sun-bronzed flesh was sallow, his cheeks sunken, as though a cancer devoured him from within. Attendants stood upon platforms at his side, wiping away the blood that leaked from his closed eyes.
"Vulcan."
At first he heard his name in his father's voice, a bitter irony indeed. He turned to the Webway portal, gazing at the grey mist of aborted ambition.
"Vulcan,"
came the voice again.
Brother, come to me.
Malkador was at Vulcan's side, watching his features closely.
Is it him?
It's him.
Vulcan's heart began to beat harder.
One last time, then. Let us see what he has to say.
Vulcan closed his eyes and sank into the precious lie. In his dreams, his brother still looked like his brother. The landscape around them was a volcanic nightmare, a realm of black skies and boiling earth, a dragon's delight. The two brothers took counsel together in psychic silence, the two of them facing one another here in the arena of the unreal. His brother was the one to bring them both here each time, and if it wasn't his brother's will, then it was the whim of the things with their talons around his brother's heart. Vulcan no longer believed there was a difference. When he saw his reflection in a pool of volcanic glass, he appeared the way he felt, weary to the point of ruination, a fact he could mask easily enough in the throne room, yet had no hope of hiding here. In this place, he appeared as a dragon on the edge of decrepitude. His scales no longer shimmered with an emerald luster. Instead, they were faded to flawed jade. His eyes, which had been searing red, were tight and dull with torment. Even the fire within him was down to an ember, a guttering flicker of warmth. His brother, the sorcerer, descended slowly in a haze of purifying light. The light warmed the dragon. It quickened his blood and re-knit the throbbing internal breaches inside his body. It promised true healing, if he would only stop resisting it.
"I hate seeing you like this," his brother said.
Compassion shone in the sorcerer's one eye.
"It needn't be this way, brother." "You are not my brother,"
the dragon grunted as he shifted his pained form. Even his bones ached. They sent pulses of cold through the meat of his muscles.
"You still deny me,"
the sorcerer said, the words rich with regret.
"Do I not bring you here? To Nocturne? To ease your spirit?"
The dragon managed to laugh, though it tasted of dust instead of fire.
"This is not Nocturne," he said. "The stars hang where they should in the sky, yet they shine wrong in the black. The chemical processes of the rocks are exact, yet the stone feels wrong to the touch. This is Nocturne through the eyes of someone that has seen my homeworld, but never understood it. Someone that never loved it."
The dragon, despite his throbbing joints, bared his fragile fangs in a tired smile.
"Someone," he added, "or something."
The sorcerer went to one knee, the very image of unthreatening reverence. The voice, trembling with emotion, scarcely rose above a whisper.
"I am still me, brother. I speak only the truth."
The dragon sighed another ashy breath.
"The truth, if it even matters in dreams, is that my brother died long ago. You are not Magnus. You are an impossible god's idea of Magnus."
Laughter echoed all around them, the laughter of a thousand mocking voices, delighted at a joke only one of the brothers could ever understand. The dragon crawled back from the chorus of mad mirth, all while the sorcerer stood in silence, radiating compassion, radiating patience and understanding.
"How can you not hear that laughter?"
the dragon asked him.
"You are mocked, mocked without end, by the god you pretend you do not pray to."
"There is no laughter," said Magnus the Red. "I hear nothing but your lies, Vulcan."
The dragon gave a weary smile with a mouthful of cracked fangs.
"Enough! Enough of you, and enough of the thing animating you. Leave me be."
"Let me in," countered the sorcerer. "This is only the beginning of your pain, brother. I've foreseen far greater agony in your future. agony even you cannot endure. But that pain will end with the mercy I bring. In place of devastation, I offer you enlightenment." The dragon dared not turn his back on his one-eyed brother, even here in dreams. He withdrew slowly, crawling over the rocks, his slitted gaze never leaving the sorcerer.
"Let me in," Magnus said again. "How much strength does Father have left? How much time remains in his performative defiance? An hour? A day? The sky above the ash clouds seethes with the god's arrival. The Khan is finished. Gilliman is still lost in the endless black. Angron bathes the Palatine Ring in imperial blood, and soon he will break Sanguinius. Fate sings of all of this, Vulcan. I will reach the Webway portal. I will break Father's barrier. In a million futures I already have. Don't make me break you with it."
The dragon gave a growl.
"I am not sure I can be broken."
"You can die, Vulcan. You can be unmade. Everything of mortal origin can be unwoven with the lullaby of obliteration.
Please don't make me be the one to end you." "Does this fate of yours sing of that too?"
Magnus smiled. "It grieves me to admit it, brother, but yes. To oppose me is to suffer annihilation. I wish it were not so, and it need not be so." The dragon managed to return the smile. He was too weary to be amused, but the sorcerer's insistences still kindled something like mirth deep within.
"Of the many failures in our family,"
the dragon said through clenched teeth,
"you stand exalted above the rest of us, wrapped so comfortably in your delusions. At least the others have the courage to face up to what they've become. Only you, Magnus, only you still, cannot see who you really are."
The dragon kept crawling, slowly retreating. The sky fractured with knives of laughter. The illusion before him broke apart. Magnus was gone. Or rather, Magnus was finally there. The sorcerer was no longer Vulcan's brother. He was a towering monstrosity, a beast of cloven hooves and with a crown of fire, a monster with wings that shed mother-of-pearl feathers. The dragon stared at this thing of mutation and mutilation, this thing that stank of all the lies it didn't know it had devoured.
"There you are."
The dragon breathed the words, feeling the fire awaken inside, tasting the smoke running between his sore teeth.
"There you are, brother."
"He has to die, Vulcan!"
bellowed the creature that had been Magnus the Red.
"He will damn the species to extinction! Let me in! Let me heal all the damage he's done! Stand with me! You need not die with the others!"
In the face of this anger, the dragon said nothing. He crawled away from the inevitability of his brother's victory, from the laughter of his brother's god, and from the dream itself. He had to conserve his strength. He couldn't waste it here. His father needed him. The dragon opened his eyes. No time had passed. Malkador stood by his side, looking up with the expression of hawkish concern Vulcan had come to know all too well of late.
"He revealed himself,"
the sigillite said, his voice barely carrying over the rising hum of the Emperor's awakening machinery.
"Didn't he?"
"He did not intend to. I doubt he realized he had let the mask fall. Truthfully, I doubt he even knows what he looks like now. Righteousness radiates from him, thick enough to choke us all. He is blinded by the light of his own halo."
Malkador looked up to the golden throne.
"There are those who would say Magnus is very much his father's son in that regard."
Vulcan's stare glinted with fatigued amusement.
Do you criticize our Emperor, noble regent?
Merely an observation. An insight into the perceptions of others.
Malkador showed neither amusement nor shame, remaining preternaturally neutral. Vulcan had already looked away. His gaze was drawn inexorably to the half-living webway portal. That vast arch of Terran steel and alien stone that led into the dimension between dimensions. He could feel Magnus in that realm, drawing closer. Soon the Crimson King would knock on the door. His eyes narrowed, his knuckles tightened.
Let it be finished.
Malkador nodded at the Primarch's murmur.
Come then. Everything is ready.
He wouldn't have long. Malkador had impressed that upon him, though he hardly needed to be told. The Sigilite's compulsion to make the obvious even clearer was the closest Vulcan had ever come to seeing Malkador show nerves. Those arrayed in loose ranks behind him also needed no reminding, and no rousing speech before it all began. The men and women armoured in Imperial gold were among the finest of those still fighting, slowed by the fewest wounds. Malkador had worked for days, and to the best of his ability, to gather them from across the besieged Palatine Ring. Every one of them had withdrawn when ordered, accepting the likelihood they were being asked to sacrifice their lives in the Imperial dungeon for the sake of an insane gamble.
Is this your will, Father?
Vulcan expected no answer, and sure enough, that's what he got. So be it. He refused to look back at the golden throne, or the phalanx of warriors behind him. He faced ahead, the great hammer, Urdracule, in his hands, and kept his last questions sealed behind stern lips. He would show no doubt to those around him. Not to the adepts now holding their ground in defensible groups, not to the men and women that stood ready to die to give him this one chance. Maybe it didn't matter if it was the Emperor's will or not. It was Malkador's will, and that was a voice that carried no small weight. But more importantly, it was Vulcan's desire that set them on this course. Once decided, the Primarch of the 18th Legion was a difficult man to move. This had to be done. He raised Urdracule high. Fractals of electric light reflected from the weapon as the throne room's machinery reached the crescendo of its technomagical song. The Emperor's engines whined, roared, spat out warning klaxons. In the very same second, without even half a heartbeat between their unity, every custodian and sister of silence behind him raised their weapons en garde. The hammer fell. The golden throne, keeping the doorway between dimensions closed, shrieked with a cacophony of iron-breaking release. Grey mist became golden light, flooding into the chamber through the great portal, and the army of every species hell raged its way into reality. Vulcan ran for the webway gate.